Before we jump into this conversation, a quick word from the guys over at Swim Nerd. Are you looking for a pace clock that won't break the bank? How about one that every swimmer can see? The Swim Nerd Pace Clock is the most innovative and affordable digital pace clock the world has ever seen. Their 9-inch tall green LEDs are specifically made for outdoor viewing and are visible from 100 meters away. Bluetooth enabled, it connects to your swim practice mobile app, allowing you to program any set your heart desires. Take a minute, go to swimpractice.com and check out their amazing new pace clock. It truly is the world's best swimming pool pace clock. That's swimpractice.com. One more time, because I really want you to take a look at this. The pace clock is the most quintessential piece of training equipment for any swim team. Go to swimpractice.com and get yourself the best pace clock in the world. Today on the Swim Brief, the return of Nicholas Messer. He's in a new geographic location. We talk about that a little bit, what brought him to that new place. We go through some of the stuff that I found really interesting that's going on that he's already been exposed to, and even get into streamlines. Do we have another member of the Anti-Streamline League? You're going to have to wait and listen and find out. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do too. Hello and welcome to the Swim Brief. It's been a long time. It's been like at least 6 months. I mean, I think it was 6 months ago we were sort of breaking down the clinic circuit. Now joining me from Sweden, from Lund, Sweden, Nico Messer. Nico, how are you?
Hey, Chris. Actually, I'm sitting in Malmö because that's where I live, but I just got here from Lund, but close enough. It's a 10-minute train ride, so we're close.
Well, Skåne. At least you're in Skåne somewhere.
Skåne, yeah. Exactly.
It's a holiday there, one I've never heard
somewhat. Somewhat inofficial holiday before May 1st, which is kind of like in Europe.
Yeah, May Day.
It's a day where you kind of, it's the work day, right? You're allowed to go and strike for your rights when you think you're not treated right at your workplace. But what happens on April 30th, so today, is they call it Valborg. Yeah. So it's like Night of the Witchcraft. And it sounds like it's an excuse to have a big party. And with Lund being a big university city, there's a lot of people who like that idea, I guess. So what happens is people meet, and as early as 7:30 in the morning in the parks, and they sit there and they drink till they light the fires at night, which I guess is going to happen not anytime soon because it's still really bright outside over here in Sweden. Even we're closing in on an early night.
Yeah, we just have to. We're just getting to that part of year. You're going to have really, really long days. I have an important question for you. We're going to get to why you're in Lund in a second and some more details from it. But have you eaten soup from bouillon yet?
I have not done that.
Oh my gosh, Nico. Look, this is the best soup in all of Europe. There in Lund, Sweden, you've got to go. Anybody, you know, after you listen to this podcast, I think many people are going to want to travel to Lund.
Yeah.
As I say, as somebody who proposed to his wife, actually in Malmö, you know, Malmö is the most romantic city in all of Europe. It's well known, but Lund is like a close second. And they have a wonderful, wonderful little soup restaurant that is only open for a few hours a day, and people line up to get this soup. So I hope it's still open. You know, but
I will certainly find that out. And I guess if you're a swim coach, you can skip the line. Is that so?
I'm not sure that's exactly how it works. But so tell people, Nico, why are you in Sweden?
Well, you know, I started a new job with the swim team there, which is called Poseidon. And it was kind of like, you know, when you think a door closes, another door opens. And sometimes you've been waiting for a long time because you want to pursue something and it's just not happening.
Yeah.
And at some point you have to think about actually making a living also.
Right.
And things just seemed to connect in the right time for this. And I've been here twice. And if people want to travel to Lund, they should all do it next January when Poseidon is going to organize their coaching conference. So, yeah, I've been here for that myself twice. I know the people here a little bit. I guess I thought that things would be right here and that there could be a lot of potential for me to maybe, let's say, prove some people wrong and but that's not the most important thing, but it's right. Just kind of like, you know, keep doing what I would like to do, and that is coaching, because at one point, you know, is when it comes down to the money, I was thinking really hard about doing something else because
yeah.
I needed to make money, and coaching wasn't a real option at that time. So I'm really happy that I can keep doing this.
Yeah, I mean, really a lot of heavy stuff in there. I mean, I want to get to the conference in Lund a little bit later. I think we did touch on that a little bit when we talked about different conferences. It's every other year, and it's got quite a cast of people. But what specifically is the job in Lund? What kind of work are you doing there? And then talk a little bit about what attracted you. What you think is unique about Lund?
Well, so the last couple of years I've been the benefactor of what I'm doing now. So I'm coaching the group over here that is called Sumsim, which basically is what you would call the age group age in the US and I guess anywhere else. But they have their own competition, and the competition is called the same as the group. So I coach a lot of younger athletes now. That basically means 15 and down. Mm-hmm. And that should possibly even change to 14 and down. And I've been going from having the most 8 to 10 athletes the last 2 years to now have a group with 47.
Wow.
So it's a big change in what I do. I mean, I still coach, we still swim. So that stays, but it's most definitely a different way that I have to think about what we do and how I want to approach it. So the other thing also, now I've been more or less by myself the last 2 years and more or less by myself the last 4 years, including. So now I work in a team where I'm no longer the head coach. So I do make some decisions, but I'm not the one deciding a lot of this stuff.
Right.
I have to convince people. I have to sell it. If I want to do it, I have to explain why. And I'm also in charge, if that's what you want to call it, of 6 or 8 other coaches that either are working with me or below me. So I also have to get used to working in a team again.
Yeah.
Which also brings its challenges, you know, not saying that I cannot do it, but I kind of been on my own and just deciding when I want something do, I ask myself, do we want to do it? And I decide, yes, let's do it. So that's kind of how the process went, and now it's not like that anymore.
Right, right. I when I was coaching in Denmark, we did two training camps up in Lund, and I loved going there. You know, initially I was attracted because of the Center for Aquatic Research and the promise of underwater filming. After doing that once, I realized, you know, it's helpful to do it more than once. Mm-hmm. So you have, yes, some frame of comparison of everything. But talk a little bit about the Center for Aquatic Research and the sort of special setup they have there.
Well, so Tobe, who's the head of sports in the club, is leading that. And basically what it is they do a lot of projects with money from the federation, and they research on different topics. So one of the things is obviously the high performance side, which you mentioned is like they have a video system. It's called AIM.
Yeah.
So for other people in Europe, they may know Eindhoven, you know, they also have the videos in the pool. I think they also have it in Antwerp and in Belgium. But here it's basically also installed, but it also tracks the swimmer and it gives you a lot of other numbers that may be useful or not useful for yourself.
Right.
The challenge, and that has been the challenge, I mean, you probably noticed that, is you can do it once, and it's probably nice to do it.
It's cool.
The,
yeah.
The benefit of once is probably not that great.
Right.
And we just had a Finnish team here 2 weeks ago, Tartu, that they did it. And also, I guess Toby's trying to improve the system. So there have been some challenges. With the components not working maybe as great together as they should. So I'm trying to learn the system, because that will also be one of the tasks that I will hopefully be able to help with or be charged with to do. And I think there's a lot that can be done on this part also of the club, because it goes a little bit with the club, even though it's part of the research center, that hopefully the experience can improve a lot for whoever decides to do this. And I think I've seen the video before, but now that I have actually sat on the computer and got the videos, I'm actually really, really, really impressed by the quality and what you can get. So just because the cameras are steady in the pool, and you can, if you swim 100, you get the whole 100, right, every single centimeter of it. So,
yeah. Yeah, you get every single centimeter of it from, like, sort of the perfect angle.
Exactly.
Yeah, really cool stuff. So, you've coached in Switzerland. Now you've coached in the U.S. Now you're coaching, mm-hmm, in Sweden.
Yes.
What is different, as far as your experience so far? What's been different in Sweden versus some of those other places? What's unique about Swedish swimming?
Well, you know, I've been told from some of my friends over in the U.S. that actually, since I've went to Sweden, nothing changes, because it's one and the same.
Right.
For most of my friends over there.
Oh, so, right. Sweden and Switzerland, it's the same country. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like the Dutch all live in Denmark, right? It's, yeah. Yes.
So, no, but I mean, I haven't really been able to figure that out, because I'm still learning most of it. I guess a lot of it is similar, because you cannot just do stuff different, because we have the Fina, we have Len, that give us rules that everyone has to follow, and that gives you a little playbook that you have to move yourself in. But then what I think is really interesting, what they do here with the younger kids, And I'm not quite sure. I think it's not the case that it's done all over Sweden, but it's done in the Skåne region. They have something that is similar to dual meets for the young kids. So it's called Series Swim and Simjorden, where they compete in separate divisions. And you can move up or go down divisions depending on how well you do in the year. And they're supposed to be shorter meets. Most of the athletes race a lot. And it's a team competition, so they like to go there. Like this Saturday, there's the regional final, and there are actually four girls on of my group that have to go there, and they're all really excited to go there and miss practice. which I'm telling them, I'm happy for them because their practice is probably going to be harder than ours.
Right. Yeah, well, you just wait until you get to a bigger swim meet and they start running behind the timeline and your Swiss brain wants to explode because things
That just happened because we've been in Ystad this past week and you would not believe it. I think half an hour into the meet, we were 15 minutes behind schedule, and I'm trying to figure out how we can lose 15 minutes in half an hour, but somehow we did it.
This was my main attraction for coming to a swim meet in Zurich way back when we met for the first time. I was like, you know what, I'd like to go to a swim meet that I know is going to run on time, and I can still vividly remember us falling possibly 30 seconds behind the timeline and the look of panic on all of the Swiss volunteers' faces and horror. Like, what can we do to get this thing back on schedule? I never felt that at any other swim meet in my life where people are just sort of throwing their hands up. Well, we're behind. You know, it happens. but I'm sure that's...
Yeah, well, you know, like, there were... I think two or three heats where people decided to scratch, and I'm like, well, why don't they swim together? Because the first heat was one boy who swam by himself.
Yeah.
And then I think it was four, and then it was five. So you could easily have made two heats out of this, which would happen in Switzerland. I mean, they would just do it, you know? Right. So that poor boy, actually in the heat one, he had to swim by himself. I'm like, why are we doing this? I mean, give him a lane with someone else.
Yeah. Did they get you a heat sheet by the time the meet started? Because this was another frustration I had in Denmark. We started many meets without an actual heat sheet in hand because of how late they accepted scratches and all sorts of other things.
They actually did, but we only got one, and we were three coaches. So I decided for myself, because it's been the first meet where I really have been leading the charge in training before, that I had, except for five of the younger athletes that were good enough to qualify for the meet in Stockholm, I have really not seen a lot of them racing, because I got here on a Sunday when they had a meet, and the first thing I did, I went from the airport to that meet.
Yeah.
So I saw all of them racing, but I did not know their names. I did not know their faces. So I could pick out some things that I liked, some things that I think needed to work on, and some things that I didn't like, but I could not connect it to swimmers or faces. So that was the first meet where I could actually do that, because I positively could probably remember 90% of the names and connect it to a face, and a few odd ones I didn't know because they have never showed up or... they have just been hiding in the back of the group.
Right.
But so I decided for myself, I won't need the heat sheet because I will not be timing or writing anything down. I will just be watching for once. So I was not stressed out by that at all.
So one of the things, and one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, you do a very good job of... you're one of my friends that when you see something that you think might be of interest to me, you just sort of send it along. And probably coming up on a month ago, you sent me some information on a day that you had to cancel practice so that, let me understand if I'm getting this information right, so that actually parents and swimmers could get some information from a couple of speakers on sexual abuse and grooming. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah. So, yeah, it was the first week. So I was technically in charge of what we were doing, right. But I was not leading the training.
Right.
Also because I'm still trying to learn Swedish, I did understand quite a lot because I knew what we were talking about. And thanks to you, I actually felt like I knew quite a lot about the topic that was discussed that evening.
Right.
But it was an evening that was organized by the Skåne Swimförbund. So it's the regional federation.
Yeah. Sorry, we should explain Skåne for everybody who's been listening to this podcast is a region of southern Sweden that's right next to Denmark. Actually, very, very nice for me because I was trying to do some research on this stuff you sent me. And that's the only part of Sweden where I can understand what anyone's saying. So... Once you learn your Skånska, like we could be able to converse, Nico. It could be fun in another language. Yeah, we'll have a whole new one.
Exactly.
Anyway, go on.
It was an evening that was organized, and it was not just swimming, but the swim association from Skåne was one of the associations that was organizing that. And it was for parents and athletes mainly, but the coaches were also invited to go. Like, we were told we should go.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. And basically what they wanted to talk about was the topic of abuse in general, what that means, and grooming, of course, how you get there. And... So I guess there were about maybe 100 people or so, because they got the fika before the presentation, which makes a lot of people show up for events here. That's what I learned, is you do always 15 minutes of fika, and then you do the event, and people come for the fika, and they have to stay for the main event.
Explain to people what fika is too, because it's another great concept.
Yes, it's basically an excuse for you to sit down with someone and talk about something or have a meeting with coffee or tea and something to eat.
Yeah,
which is a fine concept, but can make you lose a lot of time throughout your day. you need to master how to do it.
You need to know when to deploy the fika. Yeah, go ahead.
Exactly. It was really interesting because, and I would have to pull out the link again. So Lasse Westholm, who's kind of well known here in Sweden because he does a lot of the announcing, was kind of the moderator of the night, and he presented a project that he's involved in that is taking on this challenge. And then there was actually the wife of the head coach from our team, Ida Marco Varga, who's been swimming on the national team in Sweden for many years and went to a couple Olympics, who experienced that when she was younger, similar to kind of, I guess, what's going on now in Denmark. And she actually explained the process of how she got to the place where she is now and what happened. So it's not like they just were telling you, oh, be careful, this and this could be dangerous. There was a real story. And because she was telling the story, and I mean, we hear that also on your podcast, this is not easy to tell for people.
Right.
I mean, I was sitting there, and even though I guess... a lot of the things I could not understand, you could tell that it was really hard for her to tell by how her body was moving and her voice.
Yeah.
And I guess that is what had the people sitting down and really at the end also have a lot of questions, because there was someone who actually has real experience in this, which is not a good thing in that case, but who they could ask something and they would get a real answer from. So I think it was a really good evening, because the amount of parents and athletes that were there surprised me kind of a little bit, I must say, because, I mean, it was free, you had to sign up, you know, it's based, it was on a Thursday night, so it's midweek, it's not what you would expect usually people to show up.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really encouraged by you sending it to me, because I think that, you know, I think one way people have chosen or see that is an avenue for combating this problem is education. And I think that that is done with all the best intentions. But I think in some way, one of the ways I think we're missing the mark here in the U.S., or one thing we could do a lot better at, and I'm sure in many other places they could do a lot better at, but that this is a nice example of reaching out to parents and athletes, because I think they're actually the most important group to educate. They can then know sort of what is appropriate behavior from a coach and what isn't. And to the extent that we can give them some tools for identifying and sort of laying down markers and boundaries, I think that that will be really helpful in the long run. So one other thing you messaged me about that I want to get you on the record on,
Nico. Oh, yeah, please do.
Are you pro or anti-streamline? The world wants to know.
Oh, well, here's the thing. So I think I've mentioned it before that while I was working with the Army group, I have also been helping out one of the teams from the one of the guys who was in the Army group. And that's when the conversation of streamline started to come up. And I don't remember if I heard it through you, but right. I think it was one of your podcasts.
I did have a podcast, Streamlines are Stupid, or Streamlines Are Wrong,
exactly,
or something very provocative, yeah.
But you were saying the streamlines are going to get away, right? And at that time, I was also coaching some younger kids, and I mean, I guess like a lot of coaches, I get frustrated by the fact that they don't streamline or they don't go past the 5-meter flags. You know, if they're the younger kids, or go past the 10 or go all the way to the 15. So by that point, I decided that I would no longer pressure streamline, because it's a concept that doesn't help the issue.
Yeah.
But what I really want is to get them past the 5-meter flags. And I don't care if it is with a streamline or not. Mm. I want them to do it, and I just figured they will find a way to do it. And I will tell them if the way they choose to do it is legal for their swimming event or not. And as long as it's legal, and I can tell that they're faster for however long they choose to go underwater than swimming on top, that would be fine with me. So you have people that naturally they end up choosing the streamline for a reason or another, without me telling them you have to streamline. There are others that don't, because they don't feel that's how they move fastest underwater or most efficient. Or maybe they're still trying to find out what is best. So by that time, I was kind of in between, right? Because then you also, like, you coach the big kids, and it's, oh, you have to be hyper streamlined, and it has to reduce your drag and everything, and everyone is doing it, so that's naturally what you go to. And then I come here, and people may need this as a little background. The club here, and that's also through the conference, is working a lot with Milton Elms. So I was told on my second day that we don't streamline. or at least we don't teach it. You know, okay. It's the same thing. If they choose to do it, that's what they do. But
we don't teach it.
I guess, yeah, Milt's been here. They've done testing, you know. You can be as fast at the 15 streamlining or not streamlining going underwater. That's what they found out. So I'm part of this system. So that's what we do. I don't think streamlining anymore. If someone wants to do it, then that's fine with me. And a lot of the 47 athletes in my group, they do it. But it may
you
not
don't,
be...
You don't throw kickboards at them or yell and scream about that at all? Or you just sort of... It's.
I was told I'm not allowed to do this.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. Right. No, right. Of course, no. I mean, you know, and I'm really at peace with this one. I think, you know, because whatever you choose to do, and that's really firmly what I believe now, is that the clock will tell me if it was the right choice or not.
Yeah.
You know, it's like technique. I would like for all of them to have a great technique and look really nice when they swim, so people think I'm a good coach and I'm teaching well and they look nice. And of course, that's part of swimming fast, is having a good technique. But then... everything that happens out of the water above the surface, there's no resistance. So I don't think it matters that much. And at the end of the day, even if it's underwater, not perfect, if they end up winning the race, that's probably what they care about. And so that's what we're focused on. And not really the streamlines, but naturally, you know, it's like, you end up with something that resembles a streamline, and this has different shapes, right, for different athletes. And it's probably something that a lot of people would not call a streamline, and that's why I stopped using the word. And I still do sometimes, you know, because I'm also one of the guys who has been streamlining, yeah, and it has been hammered in my head a long time.
Right.
And I've taken a coach's education class where they say, you got to streamline or you're, yep, not swim.
That's right. So I used to tell swimmers that streamlining was free money. That just, like, literally, you know, you had to be so dumb not to streamline when you came off the wall. And I have been convinced otherwise as well. And it, I feel a need to point that out, because I know this is still pretty controversial stance. Even deciding that you're going to be neutral about streamlines is a pretty controversial stance still in swimming. Like, not even, yeah, you know, I don't think either of us have said streamlines suck, although someone once told me that I asked them, I said, I won't say who, but maybe people can put it together. I said, do you think streamlines are bad? And the person replied to me, no, I mean, I don't think streamlines are bad, but I just think that if you streamline, you're a effing idiot. which was not what we're saying on this podcast, but I do think you make a nice point about it, because when you even express sort of a neutral streamlining stance, I think there's a lot of people who think, oh, well, you just like sort of have swimmers' limbs hanging wildly out in front of them doing whatever. There is something going on up there. It's just not what we would classically call a streamline, you know, hands wrapped, yeah, over the top of each other, and shoulders extended and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly. So, and you know, it's like, I still tell them we go underwater kicking fast.
Yeah.
I just don't define what the shape is looking for. And it's not just, I guess, streamlining, although that is at the center of this, but a lot of the things And this comes from stuff outside of swimming, just natural movement.
Right.
On myself and learn about is, I start to look a lot more for shapes than maybe other things. And I think it is right for me. I don't say it's right for everybody. Because it connects to other things that I do on land and in the water.
Yeah.
And I think everybody has to find out for themselves if that's something that they could consider or not. And it certainly takes a lot of strength, you know, in the beginning, because you do want to tell them to streamline.
Yeah.
And go. And you just have to hold yourself back and don't do it. And it does take time. And by time, I don't mean 1 or 2 days. It probably takes a couple weeks till you may see progress in what you would qualify as such.
Right.
Doing this.
Yeah.
And especially at the age of athletes that I'm working with now, I do have time. That's all I have. So a couple weeks are nothing if they keep going for many years.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things I've probably discussed on some other podcasts, I think, is that you're pointing to there is I heard a lot about Danish rowing when I was in Denmark, and one thing that I thought was very smart was they really had a lot of development strategies that were just built around keeping people in the sport for as long as possible. And I think more and more swimming governing bodies should be looking at something like that as the age of the elite athletes trends older and older. The strategy for having a good international team should be less and less about, you know, identifying the top talents at a young age, and I think much more about how many people can we keep involved to a certain point and give them the most time to an opportunity to develop. It's probably something, again, that we have a lot of systems in the U.S. that we take for granted sometimes, that we have a college system that buys a ton of older athletes more time than pretty much the rest of the world to continue to develop. Okay, finally, you've convinced me that I'm going to apply to talk at ISCA. And I wanted to bring that up on the podcast first because I like to have transparency about these kind of things. People think I'm joking when I make a blog post that says what I would do as USA Swimming National Team Director or head of ASCA. And I guess I am kidding in the sense that I don't really expect somebody to say yes to those things. But I also think it's good to get out there what you believe in, you know, tell people what you believe in. So I'm going to put this ISCA thing out there too, so people can know that if I'm not speaking at ISCA in the fall, it's because I got rejected. Because that happens too, you know. But I wanted to thank you because that's another thing that you poked me and messaged me about. And I think you've been good. I have no idea who these naysayers are that you're trying to prove wrong, because I don't meet any Nico Messer naysayers. I only meet people that like you. You by poking me to continue engaging with some of these forums, you keep me from isolating in my little bubble and only speaking with people who agree with me on 99% of things. So I appreciate that.
Well, you're very welcome, Chris. But you know, I'm really... When did you have your first certification? It was like this past weekend, right?
Yeah.
And I'm extremely mad that I missed it, you know, because... I mean, when you posted about it, I was like still in a different environment, in a different position. I'm like... that's something that I absolutely want to do. But then I ended up here, and it's not something that I could just decide on doing. So I had to miss it, which really annoys me. And I'm like, well, there, even though the possibility is really, really small, because the window of my days off is really not when the ISCA conference is going to happen. I'm like, well, I want to hear you talk about it in more than just your podcast, because if you didn't have anything more interesting to say, you wouldn't do this certification. And right, I mean,
from people would be very dissatisfied with it. They'd be like, oh man, he's got nothing else.
I heard you've done a really great job and people got a lot out of it. So that's why when I saw that they were looking for speakers, because that's something I haven't seen the previous years for that clinic. I'm like, well, I know one guy that I, at least if I attend, I would like to hear of and I would like to learn from. So I told you that you should apply for it.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'll get the spot. Because I think you talk about something, and you know, a lot of people, myself included, may not really understand the extent of what you talk about, because it's something most people don't know a lot about. But I think it's something that if you get to know it better, can really benefit you, and not yourself, but yourself and your team, and maybe even people around yourself. So
yeah,
why wouldn't we want to do this, right?
Well, thank you. And I'll keep people updated. And thanks for bringing up that weekend. We had a great time, a group of us out in Livingston, Texas, this past weekend. It was really, really inspiring, the group, and the kind of conversations we were able to have. We actually did not have a single conversation about streamlines or where to put your hand on freestyle or anything like that, which in many ways, I think for a lot of people involved, was pretty refreshing. Nico, I'm going to be following what's going on with you in Sweden. I think I'm going to be in Scandinavia this summer, but you'll probably actually be on the official Scandinavian vacation at that time, but maybe we'll have a chance to meet up.
I hope so.
Yeah, and maybe we'll see each other either way. Oh, we're going to talk more about what's happening, but let's save that for later. We can still...
of course.
It's still 9 months away that people should be coming to Lund, but there's a great swimming conference that happens there. And if you're thinking, how the heck do I get to Lund? Never heard of that city. Shame on you. It has a wonderful cathedral that everybody should see. And it's very close to Copenhagen, Denmark. So you can fly into Copenhagen and take a train and be there 45 minutes after landing. So easy to get to.
That is all true.
All true. And they have wonderful soup. Check back. Nico's going to try the soup. If it's still open, and he's going to tell everybody about it.
That I will do.
Okay. Thanks, Nico.
Bye, Chris.
There it is. My conversation with Nicholas Messer. Always good to check in with him. For more great swimming conversations, go to chrisdcoach.com. That's C-H-R-I-S-D as in DeSantis coach.com. You can see my blog. From earlier the week, I talked about the difference between, or really not the difference between, leading really positively and having really high expectations, having a really high level sentiment for what you want as behavior on your team. And that was something that we really got into this past weekend when we were working through some optimism in coaching at the certificate program I ran down in Texas. In the future, look for more great podcasts. I think I have a blog coming in the hopper. It's going to be all about predicting the future of safe sport. Spoiler alert, doesn't look good. But look for that later, probably early next week. And otherwise, I'll see you soon.